Welcome to the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Joe and Ron are self-proclaimed teacher nerds, geeking out on all things education. They are looking to move educational practices out of the 1900s factory worker model to a student-driven classroom full of empathetic, creative, and collaborative students willing to take risks. Join them as they chat with educators from around the world, discussing educational tools, techniques, ideas, policies, and much more. Thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds. And now a word from a sponsor.
Oh, have you heard about the nerds? What's the word? Teacher Nerds. You can tweet them out on Twitter. You can find them on the gram. After listening to their podcast, you'd be sitting there like, bam! Trying to take the teaching from one level to the next. Reaching up to Canada and down to Mexico. Gotta go. Teacher Nerds. Start the show.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. I'm Ron Nober.
I'm Joe DiPaolo.
I am a technology teacher for third grade to eighth grade.
And I teach third grade.
And today our guest is Jed Derryberry. Coming to us from South Carolina. Welcome, Jed.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
And Jed, I just got to say, to before we start, you know, in May of this year, you put out just an Instagram post about you having a colonoscopy and, you know, something near and dear to my heart. My mom's a 25 plus year colon cancer survivor. So just want to really tell you how much I appreciate you throwing that out there and getting people, you know, at least talking.
Yeah, you're welcome to that. I'm so thankful your mom is healthy and alive, a survivor from that for 25 years. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I believe in raising awareness for things like that. Every one of us has a body.
Yep.
And it goes through things and we need to talk about it. And I just had my follow-up visit yesterday, my 3-month follow-up visit from the colonoscopy, and everything was clear. 10 years ago or 13 years ago when I had my first one, I actually had a small hernia that they had discovered. And this time they said the hernia seems to be gone, which they said is almost unheard of. But that's why you go and have those checkups, so you can learn things like that.
Yeah.
About the inside. So everybody should go and find out what's going on in there.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll say right now, I'm getting mine next Tuesday, colonoscopy. I'm on the 5-year plan because of my mom's health history.
Right.
Just so important to get yourself checked out.
Well, best of luck to you there.
Thank you. So we're going to start off with our icebreaker that we do, 2 yes mores, 1 no way. And, you know, this is sitcom theme song edition.
It's time for 2 yes more, 1 no way.
And I know just from some of your posts that you do, I know, you know, at least one sitcom is you're a big fan of. So, you know, we kind of tailored it to what you post there.
I was wondering if you knew that. Of course, the Golden Girls theme song is one of the Golden Girls, hands down, it's been my favorite show. I can watch it all day, every day. It's one of those that I can put on in the background. I don't have to watch. It's just on there. But sometimes if I'm sick or not feeling well, I can lay in bed and just watch it all day. Sometimes when I'm out for a walk or a run, I will play it on Hulu and just let it go through my headphones and just listen to it. I don't need to watch it. I know what what's going on.
Right.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Who's your favorite Golden Girl?
Oh, I can't. You can't pick a favorite if you're a real fan of the show.
Oh, okay. Don't,
because they all are so unique and vital to the show. If you took one away, you don't have a show. But I will say something I like about each one of them. I love how Blanche just is so comfortable with herself that she does all the things that she does. Dorothy stands up for what she believes in. I don't care what it is. Rose's innocence. I just love how innocent and sweet she is. And Sophia, gosh, I just can't wait to be her age and just say whatever comes out of my mouth. Yeah, so yeah, I love all of them though.
Ron, did you watch the Golden Girls when they were out?
I did. We still watch them today. It's one of my wife's favorite TV shows. And she gets very excited if an episode comes on where they play the almost entire theme song. Because sometimes they cut like part of the theme song.
Yeah, they do. They do.
I think it goes to If I Had a Party, you know, like that.
Yeah,
that
it jumps. Part
they cut. Yeah.
It jumps. You're right.
So she gets very excited if that part comes on.
if you watch on Hulu, you get the whole theme song every time.
Oh, okay. All right, there you go.
Yeah, there's no jumping around. Yeah.
All right, so what we'll do is I'll go through first with my two yes mores, Jed, then we'll have you jump in, and then Joe. All right.
Okay.
So my two yes mores, first one has to be Cheers. Like it is just, it's one that, you know, like I think I just, it gets, what I did was I looked at ones that get stuck in my head, right? Because they kind of are ones that I really like. So Cheers always kind of gets stuck in my head. And then the other one goes back to my childhood was Facts of Life. Oh. Facts of Life, just like it could just start and I'm
take
ready
the good, to take the bag. Exactly. Yeah. There you have Facts of Life.
Exactly. Like it just flows. And I don't know that I was as big a fan of the show. I mean, I enjoyed the show, but the theme song like always stuck with me. So Cheers and Facts of Life. And then for me, I couldn't narrow down really one no way, but sitcoms that don't have lyrics to their theme song just makes me, you know, like The Office doesn't have lyrics. Seinfeld doesn't have lyrics. It's just music. And I can't really connect to it without the lyrics.
Yeah, I hear that.
All right, Jed, let's I think we know one.
Okay, yeah. Definitely the Golden Girls theme song I love immensely because I love the show. But the other theme song that you might not know, and you might not even know the show. It's an old show. It's called 227.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Remember? Yeah.
There's no place like home, Donna, with your family around you, you're never alone.
Yeah.
Get it together, and we'll make it right. I love that theme song.
That is a good one.
It makes me feel good, and I have the whole series on DVD, although I don't even own a DVD player anymore, but I've got the DVDs. And my no way. It's another really old one, but I remember it coming on when I was little, and the theme song creeped me out. It was Perry Mason. The theme dun 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 dun. It just creeped me out. Like it was it was like a courtroom, and it was just creepy.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, and I don't even know if technically you'd call that a sitcom because it's not a situation. It was kind of a drama, but the theme song really just always freaked me out. When it would come on, I'd like to hurry and change the channel, you know, so I didn't have to hear it all. It would just freak me out. And can I have two no's? Because I got another.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm probably going to get emails about this, but I love this show, but I don't really like the Friends theme song. I feel like it is so
100% with you.
I just don't like it. And it's the, you know, the clapping, and it just, I don't know, it just bothers me. I don't know.
It almost feels too like pushed or something. Yeah,
contrived maybe.
I like that specific part you just met. I'm not a Friends fan. I don't like the theme song, but that clapping.
Yeah.
I dig on rhythms. So like that specific. Yeah. And you know what I'm into? That, the trend on Instagram. Da-na-na-na-na.
Oh yeah. And then they're telling like things that they've questions they get.
So that's
the first, you know, like that's where my, and I think that's it. Quarter beats or I don't, that the theory is definitely over my head, but I do like, I love music and I love playing music.
Yeah. Me too.
So that specific pattern. Yeah. I think it's like you don't like it. I think it's a good, I don't know.
like I said, I'm telling you, somebody's going to email me.
Oh yeah.
I can't believe you don't.
That's I'm tweeting that out today. You know,
tweet it out. Yeah. So here's I'll let myself be redeemed just a smidge. I have a playlist that I use when I'm leading professional development at schools, and it's full of just fun songs that the crowd of teachers usually likes, and that song is on there. Because I know other people like it. I just kind of like, I don't know. I'm over it. I don't know.
No, yeah. I would definitely be walking out clapping. Not singing, not dance, but, you know. Bah, bah,
bah, bah, bah. What are your two yeses and nos?
So definitely went from my childhood. The Wonder Years theme song.
Oh, good one.
And that's just a great song in general.
Yeah.
And Bosom Buddies theme song.
I don't know if I know that
Bosom one. Bosom Buddies is Tom Hanks and I'm blanking on the other guy's name. This is my life.
It's Joel, my life.
Go ahead with your own life. Leave me alone. So that those from, once again, my childhood and the Wonder Years was the first real sitcom I remember coming on, like a brand new series.
Right.
And I remember my dad the one saying, yo, you got to watch this. This is going to be really good. And then that was probably later in the, I mean, you know, middle school, middle fifth grade, maybe sixth grade I was. So formative years. And Bosom Buddies, I just remember laughing my butt off. And, you know, I guess even younger, so maybe third grade or fourth grade. And Tom Hanks, I think, is just hilarious.
Yeah.
But I am not a Billy Joel fan.
Yeah.
Not a Billy Joel fan, but Billy Joel was the first concert I ever took a date to. It was the River of Dreams tour in the Spectrum. So, but
now that we're talking about this, though, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was going to say, now that we're talking about this, I'm thinking about all, like, Fresh Prince. I love the theme song. Yeah. Fresh Prince. Family Matters. I love the Family Matters.
I didn't get into Family Matters.
Laverne and Shirley.
Oh yeah.
What are you? Mazel. You know, I love the old shows that I say old. I mean, they're old to me, but I remember watching it when I was little, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know what was great? Nick at Night. I mean, I'm 45.
Yeah.
You know, Ron's around the same age. I don't want to throw everyone's age.
49. I'm 43.
49 yesterday.
There you go.
Happy birthday. But I remember my dad walking in with me watching Nick at Night on some of those old shows. Like, I love Sanford and Son. That's what I could have used. It was almost like James Brown should have done that because I hear that kind of funk. But my one, no way, hands down, it's my son's, a show my son watched, and I'm sure a lot of kids did, SpongeBob.
Yeah,
and I think because
I
didn't get into the cartoon and it, you know, I loved, especially in the summertime, being a teacher and having him, it was great. But when we did have those downtimes and he did get to watch TV, that would be a show we would love. And, you know, I would try and do some schoolwork over the summer while he could sit and do his thing. And I just remember that in the background. And I cringe to this day. And kids still watch it. And it's still a pretty prominent show. That's my thumbs down.
Okay.
And I don't know what kind of inspired me with this was, first, Jed, your, you know, love of Golden Girls. That's definitely out there, especially on Instagram.
Yes.
But second... I don't know if either of you have started the history of sitcoms on CNN is like a Sunday night series they're doing. And it is just, it's phenomenal. It's they talk about a lot of old sitcoms and like social justice causes. You know, really just is a phenomenal series.
And I think that as an adult, that's why I'm drawn back to the Golden Girls, because I watched it with my grandma when I was little in the 80s, you know, when it came out. But now that as I watched it as an adult, man, they were really progressive. They tackled a lot of issues. Like, they have several issues that focus on LGBTQ equality. There's an issue where they talk about AIDS. There was an issue about interracial marriage. Just the issue, the whole show of... the way it views senior adults, which ironically, the ladies in Golden Girls, they're in their mid-50s.
Right.
And now I'm here. I am 43. I'm thinking the mid 50s is 10 years.
Right. Right.
They seemed a lot older to that, yeah. than, you know, but the way Sophia, their end of life, you know, thoughts and talks and cares. I mean, just so many progressive issues that I feel like they talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the older shows really, you know, like my wife loves Designing Women.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Another one that really
that's another works. Good song.
Yeah. Candice Bergen, right? Candice Bergen?
No, Candice Bergen was Murphy Brown.
Murphy Brown.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Dixie Carter was Julia Sugarbaker.
And what was
Annie Potts, Delta Burke,
and Delta Burke. Yeah.
And then I can't remember Gene Smart.
Yep, Gene Smart.
How did I pull all of those names?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I'm a fan of Designing Women also. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I will say I haven't watched Golden Girls in 20 some odd years, but when it came out, I did watch Golden Girls.
I love it. I love it.
We watched it you know, as a family. That was one of the shows we watched.
Awesome. Hey, Jed, thanks for playing with us on that.
Of course. I love it. I could do. We should do a whole talk show about just our favorite song, our sitcoms. I love it.
No, I'd be down for that. That's for sure.
And now we're going to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment. These days, educational technology is everywhere. Choosing what tool works for your classroom and what's worth paying for is tough. Wouldn't it be great if there was a place where you could buy premium access to a bunch of tools at once? Think of it like test driving several cars before buying your favorite. Well, myedtechbundle.com is the first ever site where you can bundle together many of your favorite edtech tools, and their tools are handpicked and vetted by 3 edtech experts. With myedtechbundle.com, you bundle the tools you want and get extended premium access in addition to each tool's normal free trial period. Visit myedtechbundle.com and get started today. And now back to the show.
So first of all, I got to say, I mean, you know, like I said, I started following you on Instagram and then on Twitter, and just the content that you put out is, first of all, just fun. But also, you know, you do throw out the, you know, the social justice causes that, you know, you're into, and you're almost a little like Sophia, like you don't hold back in what you're going to put out there. Like
it's very thought-provoking,
right? Like,
right. It almost makes you stop and think. At least Ron and I have been going through a lot of trainings at school where, you know, we have to stop and think like, hey, is this right? Or am I addressing this? Or how am I addressing this? Or how can I address this?
Well,
so you say a lot of things that I think a lot of people don't say and a lot of people are scared to say.
Well, I will be very honest with you. Every time I make a thought-provoking post or something that's going to challenge someone or go against the norm, I'm scared to death. Every time I post anything like that, especially a couple of years ago, I posted a tweet about new teachers and how they have to be ready to be advocates for the profession and understand the politics of the job, in that they have to know who their politicians are and they have to be willing to contact them. And man, there was a certain branch of Twitter that took that the wrong way and thought I meant indoctrinate children and brainwash them into this leftist ideology. And, you know, it was just a nightmare. They attacked me brutally. They sent death threats to me. They mailed packages to my home. They tried to cancel me. And they one university that I had an event actually canceled because they sent emails and said, we are not going to support this university if you have him on campus. Like I was some, I don't know, it was just crazy. So I am very afraid, but there are some things that I have to push the fear aside, or some things are more important than the fear. Speaking out about equality for the LGBTQ community is very important to me. Speaking out about the spiritual abuse that many face in the church is very important to me. I was a member of an evangelical church for 35 years, and I know firsthand a lot of what goes on there. My undergraduate degree is in Christian studies in the Bible from a Southern Baptist college.
Wow.
And so I have a lot of insight to that that I think I want to share with people. I will tell you, I get a lot of pushback sometimes. Anytime I post a thought-provoking post, we're going to go with that phrase you said there. you know, my Instagram following will go down 25, 30, 40, 50 sometimes, because it makes people mad. And I'm not trying to make people mad. I don't ever want to tell you what to think, but I sure want to tell you what to think about.
Right.
To think critically about
things. And to think critically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things that is wrong in our society is we do take everything that we were taught as a kid at face value, and we don't ever ask questions about it. Yep. And, I know you don't want to get into a deep theological discussion here, but for those people who believe the Bible, it says to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Work it out. That means ask questions. Don't accept it. Ask questions. And that's where you find what you believe, is through asking those questions. And I think that's, for me, that's why I post those things. So maybe it will prompt people to ask questions. Specifically, I like to prompt people to ask questions about education.
Right.
You know, and when I do that, I'm asking them to ask the same questions that I ask myself. Is that the best way? Could it be done better? Could it be done differently for the sake of a new student, a different student, a student you've never had? And so that's why I say and do what I do on my social media. And I'm glad to know that it is thought provoking and it's making an impact out there.
Well, it definitely, I forget what you tweeted that made me start following you and then who retweeted it. But I was like, you know, I'm all about self. Like, I want to be a better person, a better teacher, the whole nine. You know, I each day, 1% better, right? Try and do a little bit better than you were the day before. And I don't know. I just see some things out there and it's definitely made me like address. And we talk about this in our professional development, but you know, we teach in a predominantly white district. Mm-hmm. So, how do we address everything that's going on with the social injustices and with the way the district is moving forward? There's some parents out there that are speaking up and coming to more board meetings. And when, you know, people say, you know, what can we do? And I think the best thing is to go to the board meetings, right? To go to speak up, to see what's going on. It's a fun time to be in education because everything's changing. But at the same time, it's challenging.
Yeah.
And it's scary because you do say the wrong thing and God forbid, you know, it's not intentional.
Right.
But through the process of growth, right, you have to make mistakes and you have to trip and you have to fall.
Right. And you mentioned that you were in a mostly white district. I think those districts are the ones who need to ask the questions even more. Why is your district all white? Is mostly white? Is it because diversity is not valued or accepted? Is it because the community has not promoted it to be a place where, you know, there's reasons to ask questions like that. And those white children are surrounded by other white children. So they need to know the impact of the Black community, of the Asian community, of the Latinx community, of the Native American community, all the more because they're not exposed to it on a daily basis. So honestly, the districts that are mostly white need the most diverse curriculum out of anybody because they're not getting it in their day-to-day lives in the community.
Right. And it's not in the normal curriculum, which is written by
mostly white people.
Men.
Yeah.
White men about white men.
You're hitting the nail on the head there. I don't know if you guys know this, but I work with an organization called the Teacher Heart Out. It's a conference series that does national events. And there's a group of us. It was me and five Black educators. I was the lone white guy that was invited to be on the team. But together we created a workbook called Becoming an Anti... it's called A Work of Heart, Becoming an Anti-Racist Educator. Mm. If you want me to, I can send you guys the link to get it. You get it on the Teach Your Heart Out website. It's a fantastic resource for you to go through as an individual, to go through as a group, to go through, as your district. It would be a fantastic tool because it's written, number one, it's written by mostly Black educators. My contribution to it was adding a creativity piece to some of the challenges that we did. And I think the most important thing in the workbook and in the work in general is to be a listener to the voices that are telling you this is what's happening. And this is how they feel, and honoring that, and not trying to say, oh, but it doesn't, that, and making excuses, you know, that just makes everything worse. It's the same for any marginalized community. When I tell people about the struggles that I face as a gay man, sometimes I get pushback. There was a friend of mine that went to college with me and said, you know, how is your life really different? What rights have you lost? And it's not that I've lost specific rights, but I don't have a right in South Carolina to be as open as I want to, because South Carolina is a right to work state. And if you go in the wrong conservative school district, they'll get rid of you, but they'll find another reason to do it. But it'll really be because you're gay, even though the Supreme Court said you can't do that. Trust me. In South Carolina, you can still do it. It's still happening every day. So it's just, but the point of that was, when he said that to me, I was like, you know, you're questioning me about the shoes I live in every day.
Right.
You know, it's very belittling, and I shouldn't have to justify. And it's the same thing with things like anti-racism, those who are anti-Muslim, those who are anti-immigrant. We've got to all listen to those communities. It's very important.
It winds up making you a better person when you can listen and sometimes just listen and then just think about for, you know, a bit of time before you say anything.
Several people asked me, you know, you grew up in the South, Jed. How did you come? I grew up in the South. I grew up in a super conservative family. I grew up in the church. So I had all those things working against me, so to speak. How did I come to this place? Well, when I was in high school, I toured Europe with a group of high school students from around the country. That's where I met my first Jewish person. I met my first Mormon person. And for me, that was a big deal because everybody I knew was evangelical Christian.
Right.
When I was in college, I lived in Alaska. I lived in Senegal right after college. So that was out of America. Then I lived in the Philippines for a while. I taught in schools that were not predominantly white. And I listened and I read books of voices that were not like mine. And, you know, I put myself in situations where I could learn from people who weren't like me. One of my greatest examples of experiencing the diversity, I was involved with a nonprofit organization for a while. And in our group, there was a mix of blacks, whites, Hispanics. There were a mix of evangelicals, Jewish, spiritualistic, atheist. There was lesbians. There was me, the gay guy. There was some agnostic. I mean, it was just this beautiful blend of people. And you can't love, you can't hate people that you fall in love with.
Right.
You can't do it. And I fell in love with that group of people. And same for me. You know, all of them said, hey, you know, we've never known a white Southern Baptist guy who turned gay. Well, not that I turned gay, who I left the church and be open, you know what I mean? Y'all know what I meant. Listeners, y'all know what I meant. But they had not met anybody like me. And so it was this beautiful group of diverse people that I fell in love with. And you learn to accept and just cherish those relationships in a way that you can't get in a community that looks just like you do. Well, and believes just like you do.
You put it into a phrase, like you have to put yourself out there, right? Like you have to put yourself into those situations. You have to take yourself out of your everyday norm.
Yeah. Because I'll tell you, you know, most people in this area are white where I live. Most of the students that I went to school with through elementary were white. Middle and high school, it became more of a diverse population, but then still it was mostly white or black with a few Latinx and a few other minority groups. But had I not sought out specific diverse friends in my life and put that, had I not made that decision, I don't know that I would be where I am as far as that. Now, look, I got a long way to go. I'm learning, unlearning things every single day. One of my closest and dearest friends, Dr. Jamela Coes, and I text all the time. We constantly have dialogue about working to become even more anti-racist, even to become more anti-homophobia, anti-xenophobia, anti ableism. You know, it's hard, and you have to be willing to do the work. It's not just going to happen.
You're willing to be uncomfortable at times.
You do. You absolutely do. Yeah.
Because you have to be uncomfortable with something that you may have thought, that you may have said at one time, that, you know, you have to be open to being uncomfortable. It's part of the growth.
Well, I refer to your tweets as thought provoking because sometimes I do stop and think, huh, really? And the quote, not, you know, just, it makes me stop and think, as a 45-year-old heterosexual white male, you know, like had it pretty freaking easy. So like when the one quote from Einstein, like thinking 99 times, but then stop and sit in silence. So to just like, you know, think about something. And Ron, you just said like to not really say something right away.
Yeah.
Like, to stop and think like, huh. And to let it stew for a while and how you feel about it. And then think, why, you know, why might I feel this way?
Yep.
It is. Sometimes it is uncomfortable and it does suck. But it's part of the change.
I got distracted when you talked about Einstein because I got the book right here. I've been doing some stuff for my courses. And I was like, where's that illustration? I drew that little picture. And I'm proud of that little Einstein. I don't know what page he's on. I can't find him.
It's right here. It's like, it's early on.
Yeah, it's early in the book.
Yes. It's, but
what page is it on? I want to look at it.
9.
Page 9? Is that? I looked right at, there he is. Little Einstein. I drew that. That was the first illustration that I drew for this book. Because we started at the beginning and I said, okay, I'm going to illustrate this right here. And I looked up a picture of Einstein online and that's what I got right there. Well,
I've been the past probably 3 years, maybe I've been trying to work on my sketchnoting.
Yeah.
So I can appreciate that Einstein. That's a good looking Einstein.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that.
You know what? I didn't even ask you, like, give us a little bit of your journey in education. How you?
Yeah,
you
know, I love that. I'm going to tell you, I love that we just jumped right into the conversation.
Like, I do too. Just really quick.
I love that because that, to your credit, that is the environment that y'all have here. Is that it? Just it invites conversation and open, honest dialogue, and I just appreciate that a lot. And it's that conversation. It needs to be happening, even though that wasn't on the official show notes plan. That conversation needs to happen in every nook and cranny of our society. So kudos for that. But as far as who I am, I've been in education for almost, 20 years. 2001 is when I began my journey. First and second grade was where I spent most of my earliest years. I did loop to third grade 1 year, but I got out of that really quickly and went back down to second grade.
Oh, you didn't like third?
I really loved the content of third grade, but there were other parts of third grade that I didn't like. So, but no, around 2010, while I was still in second grade, I started doing professional development work in the district, training people with their Promethean board. Mm. And I really enjoyed the work of teaching teachers. And then a school nearby in another district said, hey, we want you to come and teach us more about technology in the classroom at our faculty meetings every other Tuesday. And I was like, oh, okay, I can do that every other Wednesday because I had early morning duty on Wednesday. So I got to leave at 2:30 so I could get to their school by 3:30 for their faculty meeting. And so I started doing that. And around that same time, a local college asked me to start doing some adjunct work and I with their teacher ed program. And I love doing that. So I kept doing both second grade and, you know, all this extra stuff. But I really just grew to love the professional development piece and especially the adjunct work. And I left the elementary classroom in 2015 to do professional development work across South Carolina and pick up more adjunct classes. And now I am still doing adjunct classes. My first class starts Tuesday, the 23rd. And I'm doing professional development all across the country, not just here in South Carolina. And last semester, I taught 6 courses and supervised 10 student teachers.
That was, smokes.
It was quite a semester. this semester, I'm only doing 3 courses and no student teachers. It's going to it's going to be heaven. I just don't even know what to think.
After I hope last you got semester, a good vacation after last semester.
You know what? I did. Well, I did. I took 3 weeks off in July, but that was all I had because I taught two grad courses in June, and it was one of those like a week-long grad course where you go 8 to 8 every day.
Right. Oh, man.
You know, but then at the end of the week, they got their grad credit. But, man, it was exhausting. And I did. I took 3 weeks off in July, and that was it. And then I started back up the last week of July, and I've been going ever since.
Yeah, I saw you were like in Illinois, and
yeah, I was in northwest of Chicago for a work day. I was in southwest Kansas, and then I was in Belton, Texas. Y'all, if you don't know about Belton, Texas, look it up. There's a Belton Early Childhood School. Is probably one of my favorite schools I've ever been in. It is a school it's a school of 28 4K classes. That's all that's in the building, 4K. And they have totally redone their whole system of how they're teaching. And they have these experience rooms. Instead of each teacher having their own classroom, each classroom has been turned into an experience room. And every 4 or 5 weeks, the teacher and her students rotate to a new experience room, and it's complete play, immersion, and theme. I mean, it's fantastic. And I'm going back. I'm going to work with them again in October and again in March.
What are the experiences?
So, like, it's geared to 4K. So, like, one of the rooms is like it makes you feel like you're in the sky, and then another room is like you're on the farm, and another room is like a pet shop. Another room is like healthy eating. So they've got these murals on. They had a local artist who volunteered their time to come and create murals. And each classroom has its own different mural, but it's connected to the theme of the room.
Wow.
Just amazing little place. I love it. Love it. Love it. And yesterday was their first day with students. And I can't wait to get back and see the students. Cause when I was there, it was before students came. So
on Twitter?
They are on Twitter, and I knew you were going to ask me that. I'll look it up before we go cut off here, so y'all can tag them.
And I'll I have a Wakelet that I put together for.
Perfect.
So I'll put links and all to that.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, and wait, I'd be remiss if I didn't. You also met President Obama, correct?
Yes, when you were. I did. Yeah.
All right, so come on, you got to give us.
So I didn't.
That doesn't happen.
I was trying not to talk about all that, but I will tell this story because it's fantastic. So I met President Obama because I won the Presidential Award for Excellence in Math and Science Teaching.
PAMS.
They call it PAMS, and I was the winner for South Carolina, and flew up to D.C. and we got to meet the president. And when I went to shake his hand, I said, "Hello, my name is Jed Derryberry," and I was going to say, "Thanks for having us at your house," you know. And before I could say anything, he says, he looks at me real funny. He says, "Derryberry, what kind of name is that?" Well, y'all, before I thought, I said, "Well, what kind of name is Barack Obama?" Oh, my Lord. Still to this day, I cannot believe that I said that. You know, I promise you, Secret Service was over on the side. Boy, we will shoot you right here. You know, and then he kind of got tickled, and he said, "Well, what do people call you?" And he leans back and he says, "Hey, Mr. Derryberry," and I was like, "Yep, that's what they call me." Like, what else are they gonna call me? You know? And we kept getting so tickled we couldn't. And then he finally said, "Man, that is the coolest last name I've ever heard." He said, "I wish my last name was Derryberry." And I said, "All right, today I'll make you an official honorary Derryberry." Go ahead and try to say honorary Derryberry. Say it real fast. Honorary and Derryberry are rhyming words perfectly. Yep. And it is just a mouthful. Well, when he heard that, he just fell out laughing. And so did I. If you go to my website, MrDerryberry.com, you can see a picture of that moment. And there's a girl behind me, Christy Snow, and she is laughing her head off at what is going down, you know, because she heard the whole the whole exchange. So, but I met him, and then
Did everyone have that long of an interaction
with
him?
No, no,
that's awesome. It's usually a taker. And
here is what makes that story even greater. The white, originally we were not going to get to meet him. We were just supposed to hear him speak in the East Room to our group, and then he was going to have to go. But this particular day, it snowed about a foot in D.C., and it shut everything down. And he said, I don't have anywhere to go. It's a snow day. Let's shake some hands. So we were like, oh, my gosh, we're freaking out, you know, like, thank God for the snow. And so the official photographer was in the building, but they weren't set up for like official photos with each person. So he was just taking random shots. Well, after we visited, we get an email from the White House photographer that says, send us your headshot and we will go through all the pictures with facial recognition and find any of you. And that was the one they caught of me. Me and the president laughing with Christy behind me. They caught it. Is such a great picture. Oh, and we're shaking hands. And I just, when I saw that picture, I could not believe that that moment had been captured in a photo.
That's an amazing, amazing story.
I can't, I still, it happened. That was 2014. I still can't believe it was real. I can't even believe it really happened.
So I have that application sitting in my inbox.
Do it.
I had it last year, or I had it the COVID year.
Yeah.
And when COVID happened, they cut it short.
Yep.
And then they didn't do it last year. And I got the email, I guess, last week. And I'm like, oh, man, because it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. You have to do the writing portion. It's double digit pages. And then you have to do the video, which it was 45 minutes. I don't know if it's still.
I thought it was 30 minutes.
Okay. Like mine was 45. Video. I'm glad they cut it back a little bit. 45 minutes is a long time, especially for early childhood.
And I'm not even set up to do that in the classroom. Yeah. So that would be a tough situation in and of itself. I got to the point where that was the only thing I didn't do. And then COVID hit. So I was like, oh, phew.
Yeah. Well, when it comes time again, apply for it. I encourage anybody who's listening to go through the process. My principal nominated me for that. And, you know, I was so honored that she would nominate me. And then I saw that what all had to go into it. And it was a little intimidating at first. But, man, I'm so glad that I did it, because it really was. It's funny, when you go to receive the award, everybody that's a part of the award up there, they say, oh, PAMPS, it will change your life. It'll change your life. And it became a joke that week. Like, ooh, when's our life going to change? You know? But I promise you, it really will change your life. It really will.
It opens up those doors, right? And yeah.
It opened up the door for me on a larger network of national teacher experiences. And honestly, I think that's what even led to me finally finishing a book. I was inspired by a college professor of mine to write a book. But as far as finishing it, I felt like it was, you know, knowing that I had this really big network of people that would already be a fan and help me get the word out and that kind of thing. So they definitely, it's definitely a benefit.
That's cool. That's like I said, that's an awesome story. I'm glad we took that little journey.
I'm glad you did too. Yeah. It's fun to tell it.
I mean, you know, clearly we've discussed, like, you have social causes that you're into and you know, things that you think people should discuss. And I'm almost going to read what I have in the show notes questions just verbatim because, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently. I've seen it on Instagram. I've seen it on Twitter about, you know, and it's small groups, but vocal groups asking about, you know, no rainbow flags be in schools and no Black Lives Matter political flags or stickers in any classrooms or anything like that. And, you know, to me, like, a rainbow flag or a Black Lives Matter, it's not a political flag. It's not a Republican or a Democrat. It shouldn't necessarily be. You know, to me, it's things that are simply showing that, like, acceptance, kindness, empathy. It shouldn't be political. And I just wanted to, you know, ask you about your thoughts on teaching today. You know, there's this climate around things that seem to me to be basic things for humans, you know, empathy, caring, kindness, caring for your planet, caring about others. And, you know, I just wanted to see, like, what are your thoughts? And for teachers who are out there in the classrooms, do you have anything, any words of encouragement or anything to maybe that you would share with your students even, you know?
Yeah. So let me just say, first of all, I agree with you 100% there. Those things should not be political at all. There are Black Republicans. There are Black Democrats. Their lives matter. There are gays who are Republicans. There are gays who are Democrats. There are transgender Republicans. Caitlyn Jenner is an outspoken Republican. Her life matters. And the rainbow and the Black Lives Matter movement, both of those represent basically that those lives matter to should matter to everybody. So you're absolutely that they shouldn't be. But recently, about a month ago, we got a review of The Playful Classroom on Amazon.
That is what made me buy The Playful Woman, Classroom.
Thank you. Her name is Jen, wherever she's at. I don't know who she is, but thank you, Jen. Yep. She was so outraged that we would want to teach empathy every day and that we would want to use some of the United Nations sustainable goals for humanity.
Now, and listen, she was outraged. I'm only it. Through section one. So right. Through that whole section, I only saw one page that deals with the SDGs. Is there more?
You're right.
Is there more coming?
Nope.
Nope.
There's one page.
You know, I'm flipping through this book right now. That's a pretty colorful poster, and I'm not seeing it.
That is it. That is the one page. The reason we did that is because we were trying to add some girth to what we were saying about play has been named a human right by the UN.
Oh, right.
Their Council for Children. And so play is a human right. And we were adding it there. And we went into how, and the whole book is kind of empathy is woven in through the whole book, how play invites that into our lives. And I can't imagine that would be upsetting to any human. But Jen, and apparently people like Jen, were upset that we want to talk about empathy every day. If there's one thing I think should be taught every single day at school, it should be empathy. We should have compassion for our fellow human.
Yep.
I'll tell you, it's hard some days. I feel like I practice a lot of empathy, but it's hard for me some days.
Yep.
Because I get so frustrated with people who are so ignorant that they don't understand. I want the world to be a better place for everybody, not just one group. I want Republicans and evangelical Christians and all the people who are on the far right side of where I am. I want them to have happy, productive lives. I do. And the reason that I want that is because in my everyday life where I live here in South Carolina, there's some people that I love that are like that,
right?
That believe that. And I want them to have, and that what the reason that I can feel that way for them is because I love them and I live around them. And sometimes I play with them. You know, if it's a night of trivia at a local, brewery here in town, there's a great mix of people, but we play and we laugh at each other and they have funny team names and they come up with ridiculous answers. And it's hard to hate people that you play with. And that was one of the reasons that we wrote this book, is because we, of course, the chemicals of the chemicals of play that are released in your brain and the way it affects your learning, that's important. And that's a big component of why we wrote this. But we just noticed that there was so much of our society that was just at each other all the time. And we're all guilty. We all get caught up into it. But I know that when I have a playful mindset and a playful spirit, it allows me to not get so wound up that I come at people the way that I do. Now, I will be honest with you. Elected officials who make poor decisions, I don't have much of a playful spirit with them. When you're affecting somebody's safety and their equality with your stroke of a pen, I'm going to come at you pretty heavy. I'm not going to be playful with it. But I know that the more that I have my playful mindset, that the better I feel, the better I approach things,
I thought it was interesting. We've been talking about a growth mindset for the past couple of years, and how important this playful mindset is to tag along to that growth mindset.
It is
with that creativity. And you talk about, is it, it's psychological flexibility, right? Like being able to win. And I wrote on the side of the margins, when you talk about when the phone rings and then you hang up the phone and then you're like, what am I doing? Where did I put that clipboard? Yeah. Where are the papers? And I wrote next to that was on a daily basis.
On a moment by moment basis for me, especially the older I get, I'll tell you, I've gotten a lot worse. And Julie, my co-author, she is convinced that she is already like having early onset dementia. She's just convinced, and she's not. But when she forgets things, that she thinks that. And so she's already like, she's been researching that intermittent fasting will help her with that, you know. And I know she wouldn't mind me saying that. And I'm telling her, Julie, you are fine. This is happening to me.
Intermittent fasting?
Apparently that can help. Yeah. She says it can help. I believe her. Julie is a researcher. Y'all need to have her on here. She knows more about the brain than any teacher I know. And learning from Julie about the brain and the neuroscience of play has been so beneficial to me. And I've started asking this question when I do my professional development work. I ask teachers to raise their hand if they ever had a course specifically in neuroscience, not human growth and development, not theorists or psychology, specifically neuroscience, the brain, the chemicals that make it up, the parts of the brain, what the brain does, how it all works in it. And the answer is none. Yeah. We don't have any courses. Next to a neurosurgeon, educators should be the experts of a brain because it's literally the whole product of our work, you know? And I'm on a mission to help people start to better understand, educators, to better understand the neuroscience. And it's fun when you learn about all these chemicals in the brain and what they do. Y'all have heard of serotonin, right?
Yep. Yeah.
It gives you feelings of happiness and well-being. You know what else serotonin helps you to do? It helps you poop. There's your second reference to your colon. It helps you poop. The more serotonin you have, the better, the more regular you are.
No way.
That's another reason, you know, is it constipated people are grumpy, or is it grumpy people are constipated? Which is it? You know,
right, chicken or the egg, right?
Yeah, that really is. That is a good one.
Huh? They need some more serotonin. They need to get out and play some more.
Well, I could say with certainty, I did not think that was going to be
what
discussed.
So, I'm good at bringing things full circle.
So that's awesome.
Here's my thinking. A lot of people that run, right? You know why they have those Mr. Bobs around marathons?
Yeah. Okay.
Because you're running so much, like every couple of miles, people got to poop. Yeah, I wonder if that's their...
You get that runner's high, right?
So, yeah.
Y'all don't know this about me because when I started my Instagram account, at the end of 2018, in the beginning of October. At the end of October 2018, I broke my foot running a half marathon on day 290 something of not missing a day of running.
Huh.
After being I was a 40 to 50 mile an hour of not mile an hour mile per week runner. I've run 7 full marathons.
Wow!
And when I broke my foot, it took me out for most of 2019, and then once I got cleared to run again. I was just getting back into the groove a little bit, and then COVID hit, and I don't like to run in my neighborhood. I would rather go to a rail trail, and I was scared to go down there for a little while because I saw pictures of too many people down there, you know, because nobody, you couldn't go anywhere, but you could go there.
Yeah.
And I got out of the habit, and yesterday, Wednesday morning, I ran my first 5K that I've run in about 2 years.
Oh,
wow. Hey,
yeah, so I'm committed to getting back in it.
No, I hate cardio. I am not a car. I hate cardio. I hate running. I hate it all.
Well, I'll tell you, like you said, runner's high is a very legit thing. But running for me was also great solitude time where nobody bothered me. I didn't take my phone. I probably should, for safety reasons, have at least strapped to my arm, but I didn't want to take it because I didn't even want to be tempted to pull it out and look at it. Right. I didn't listen to music, but I listened to the rhythm of my feet. You said you were a rhythm guy. I would listen to the rhythm of my feet hitting the pavement, and I would think of a song that was in the tempo of my feet.
Okay.
And I would kind of sing to myself. And then I found myself writing parodies to songs. I wrote three musicals for our elementary school while I was running.
See, I enjoy, and I don't work out as much as I should now. And I busted my finger the other day. I noticed that.
I wanted to ask what was going on, but I didn't want to intrude.
Ran through a table saw. And this summer I've been doing really well up until then with working out. And I just kind of started again, like, so this is how I'm holding things now and doing things. I can't do push-ups, but at one point in time I was able to run 5 miles and felt pretty good. And I know that runner's high. I just never enjoyed it. Like I needed to run for sports and to keep my wind up for sports. But other than that, it wasn't my thing.
For 10 solid years, I lived for it. I mean, I had a schedule that I followed. I took two rest days a week, but I was very religious about not missing, and I ran no matter where I was. Even at Disney World, we'd go to Disney World, and I would be in the parks all day, but before I'd go in, and I'd get up at 6 a.m. and run 3 or 4 miles around the resort or something.
Wow.
Are y'all both in Jersey?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. We Joe and I actually teach in the same district.
So I am going to be in New Jersey in 2 weeks.
Get out.
Where?
I'm going to be River Edge School District.
Probably
Northern Jersey.
North Jersey. Yeah, we're southern. We're South Jersey.
Well, man, I wish it was closer. It's Northern Jersey. It's about 45 minutes north of the Newark Airport.
So that's probably almost 2 hours from us then.
Oh, okay. Well maybe next trip I'll be in Southern Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to work with River Edge. They I did a virtual keynote for them in the spring to close out their school year, and they asked me if I would come do an opening keynote for their district. I'll be there on the 1st.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're like, we're closer to Philly.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so we're in the Philadelphia area like that.
It will grab you, take you out for a burger. We know one of the hot spots around here.
I'm going to remember that.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm excited. If you know anybody that's needing any PD work up there,
we'll definitely.
I wish our school will.
It's a lot of fun. I'll tell you, I'm a lot of fun. My PD is not like everybody else's PD.
I can imagine.
Yeah, we do a lot of play. Playful PD.
Would your keynote be playful, or is your
My keynotes are so. One keynote that I do is called, and it's probably one of my favorites today. I have five or six that I do. It's called Creativity, Courage, and Change. And the real reason I hate squirrels. It's a funny story. I was going to work with Hamilton Southeast School District in Fishers, Indiana. This was years ago. And they were pressing me for a title for my keynote because they wanted me to talk about creativity. And I was like, okay, well, they said, do you have a title? And I was like, I don't really have a title. I just get up there, I talk, you know? And they were like, well, we need a title. And I was like, okay, call it Creativity, Courage, and Change. And then she was like, is that it? And I was like, I said, what else do you want? And the real reason I hate squirrels? She said, ooh, that's good. I'm putting that on there. And I hung up the phone. I was like, crap, what do I do now? I was like, I don't know. And then I started thinking about squirrels, and I started thinking about all of the things that I didn't like about them, like how they steal things or they eat your furniture on your back porch. And I made a list of things, and then I connected those things to the teachers in the building that were kind of like squirrels.
Yep.
And I bring it full circle. And then I don't just totally shame the squirrels. I talk about there are some squirrels with good traits.
Right.
You know? But I wear a squirrel costume while I'm doing that.
Oh, Jesus.
And it has an inflatable tail that, and I'm hesitant to say this. I don't know if you can edit it if you want, but The tail looks a little bit phallic. I'm just saying.
Okay, yeah.
Just saying. If you go on my Instagram right now, there's pictures of me wearing that.
I will be going as soon as we're done.
Scroll back to about, I don't know, the first time that I remember, it was 2018. Well, when I did the Teach Your Heart Out conference in Miami, I wore it.
I will have to look for that. I'll be putting that on the Wakelet too, for sure.
Yep, do that. Please do that. Yep, but I try to, my keynotes, it's not just me standing there talking the whole time. I try to make them interactive. So sometimes I, like for my Power of Play of All Ages keynote, I have like a little play guide that you interact with me while we're doing it. And then the only one that I have that's really me talking the whole time is called You All Get an F. And it's about the top five teachers from my career. I was a finalist for South Carolina Teacher of the Year, the top five. And I had to give a speech to my district after that. And I, since I made it to the top five finalists, I wanted to honor the top five teachers from my career. And I titled it, You All Get an F, because I really disliked our state superintendent at the time, who wanted to grade us A through F.
Oh my.
As teachers. And I said, okay, fine. You want to give me an F? Let me tell you what F should stand for. I'm going to give all these teachers an F. And it was not failure. It was words like faith and feelings and fun. And and they were sitting on the stage with me. And someone captured a really great picture of me on the stage that day. And I used that to retell the speech. And it's probably my most requested keynote that I do, because it's very inspirational. It's good for back to school. It's good for end of school year. It's good for middle of the year when teachers just need a reminder, a pick me up, why we do what we do. And I call one of the teachers during the middle of the presentation, put her on speakerphone.
Oh, cool.
Every time I call her and put her on speakerphone.
So I thought you were going in a whole different way.
When I said,
you get an F. You get an F.
Well, what's funny, the first time I did that, I kept saying something about the and another F word and this F word. Afterwards, my superintendent came up to me and he said, every time you said F word, I about fainted because I didn't know what you were about to say. I was like, I told y'all to trust me. Because see, that normally when you were delivered the speech like that, they require you to write it out and turn it in so they can like make sure it's, you know, everything's copacetic.
Everything's right? Kosher.
Yeah, kosher. And so I was like, I can't write this out because this is going to come from my heart and there's no way I can write it out. And I was like, y'all are just going to have to trust me. And if you don't trust me, I shouldn't be up there anyway.
Right.
You know, because I could turn in anything and then just get up there and say what I wanted.
So it was all from the hip.
It was all from the hip. I didn't
write
it
out. Holy smokes.
I had my five words ready, the five Fs. Oh my gosh. Can I tell you a funny story that happened that same day?
Sure.
So the way that I opened that speech, on the way to the school, the big meeting that day, my granny called and she was worried that I would be nervous. And she said, Sugar, are you real nervous? And I was like, no, I think I'm okay for my speech. I'm going to do good. And she said, well, if you get too wound up, swing by here and I got an Ativan I'll give you. Well, I told that story. I told them that my granny offered me an Ativan on the way. Everybody just died. And then I was like, wait, did I just tell y'all my granny's a drug pusher? It was the highlight of my entire career as an educator to honor those teachers from my personal life, and to share that with my colleagues in the district was just, I will never forget that day, how much fun it was. And I always learned some good advice when I was learning how to do public speaking. Somebody told me you need to make your audience laugh.
Yep.
You need to make them cry and you need to piss them off. And if you do those three things, you got a good speech. You got a good speech. And during that speech, I think I did all those things.
Why do you want to piss them off?
Well, you're not necessarily making them mad at you.
Getting them riled up.
You're making them feel some kind of angst towards somebody. There's a part of the speech where I talk about a middle school PE teacher who said some really unfortunate things to me as a student. And I know in that moment that I tell that they're really pissed off at him, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's what I mean. It doesn't mean that you're making them pissed at you. but there's something that you're making them feel emotion, you know, the key emotions. You make them laugh, you make them cry, you make them angry.
Yeah.
And you got a good speech.
I like it.
I that's, you know, cause I feel, I think I definitely have that playfulness.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
I think both of y'all do. I feel it because I feel very comfortable talking to y'all.
Well, when we were presenting our first time at Texpo, like the shit hit the fan, the projector didn't work. And like we had our administrators there, Ron's trying, and I'm like, let's just do it. And Ron started and I just kept going. And it's like, yeah, like you have to.
You just have to roll. You have to learn to roll with things. And I can tell right off the bat. I don't know if any of the listeners can even tell this, but we had never spoken before today.
No.
None of us. But I feel like I've known y'all my whole life. So that's a credit to y'all.
Thank you.
You've created this space. But so y'all are definitely playful spirits for sure.
My best playful moment was last year during an observation. I thought the morning of, if we're going to work on revising and editing and how do we revise and edit, I'm going to have something totally written out for them, not just on the board, but on a piece of paper for them. And in order to get it done quickly, I'm not the best typer. I use voice typing.
Yeah.
So it was a day at the beach.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. But it wasn't the beach. It wasn't the beach. It was day at the bitch. And I kid you not, the vice principal, or now she's the principal, is sitting there, and my co-teacher, and there's an aide in the classroom, and the aide's the one that noticed it, and she darts her, and I'm like, and the my collaborator teacher goes, should I grab him? I'm like, yeah, you better grab him.
Oh my gosh.
She flops around.
Freudian slips are the best, like that. They're the best.
That was the very beginning of the lesson.
I was delivering a speech before all of like the first and second grade teachers. We were doing a literacy thing in our district. And we had this program that we were doing at the time called Success for All. And I was supposed to say, what we really want is success for all. And I said, what we really want is sex for all. And my assistant superintendent was in the room. All of my colleagues were from across the district. There I said, and I just paused. I did just like this. I paused and I said sex for all, didn't I? And they all were like, yes, you did. And everybody just laughed and we got it out. And then we moved on and nobody ever said another word to me about it. But
you had their attention.
I never will forget it.
They said, wait, Jed's getting everyone sex?
Oh, Lord. And if you knew, like I said, where I live, it is very conservative.
Oh.
Like I said, so far in this podcast, I think I said damn, and I've said sex, and I said pissed off. And I'm worried now. I'm worried. You can't even say those words down here out loud.
Really?
No. I'm not really worried about it.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not really worried about it because I don't work for a district officially right now. So I'm okay. I'm safe.
Okay.
So we had on Jess Amato. I don't know if you know her. She's from Platform to Play is the her company.
I don't know her. I need to.
We have to connect you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Connect
please do.
And she talked at the end of the podcast that we did with her about how play can break down barriers. And I thought like it hit me reading your book, like the sociability, the us versus them mm-hmm. of play, mm-hmm. and the I loved and I never thought of it before. The connection between imagination and empathy.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to see if you could, you know, speak a little bit about that.
A lot of the influence in my own life that came from that is from the time where I lived in Senegal in West Africa. I had almost nothing in common with the people that I lived with. I lived out in a village, it was called Hende. It was me, a lone white boy in the village with Africans who were natives of Senegal. They spoke a different language. They had very different lives because they all lived in mud huts with grass roofs, no electricity, no running water. They used a bathroom outside in the hole in the ground. They washed every day from a bucket. I mean, I had nothing in common with them. But we sat around one day and told stories, and we had laughter in common. We had a ball one day, and we played soccer, and competition was in common. Mm-hmm. And the drive to play and entertain ourselves, laying outside at night and looking at the stars and making up stories about the stars and laughing. We were joking together. All of the different play personalities and the play types brought us together. And so that at the end of the day, we weren't so different after all. We had some huge differences, but the inside, the core of our humanity connected through those playful moments. You know, you talk about the imagination and empathy, you know, laying there, they would call them a pinch, P-E-N-C, pinch. It was like a bed made out of dried mallet straws. And you'd lay there and we'd be looking at the stars and we'd be telling jokes. And it just, your empathy just grew. Like you just became so compassionate for those people. Not in a way where you felt sorry for them, where you admired who they were and how they survived and how they lived. And, you know, their differences didn't make them any less than, if anything, it made them more than who I was. We in America, like we have all these things that make our lives so easy, and their lives from an outsider standpoint seem so complicated, but they were so happy and they were joyful and they, you know, just, it was just, I don't know. It just was amazing time. I remember seeing kids using recycled materials, like everything, to make toys with and sit around and play. And the ladies would sit around and sing while they were shelling peanuts. Peanuts is a big crop in Senegal, and they would shell those peanuts. And it just was, I don't know. That is where I really realized the power of play. Even, I mean, I'd always been a playful person, but those memories stuck with me. And I remember even in the weekends when we go into the city, it was a small town nearby. It was nothing for us to join a pickup game of soccer. We didn't know those people. We really didn't know those people because we were out in the village. We at least formed relationships. We didn't know those people. They were strange. But, you know, think about like in a city or at a gym where there's a pickup game of basketball. Complete strangers.
Right.
But the play brings them together. And a lot of times, I bet if you set all those people down and ask them their political beliefs, their religious beliefs, their sexuality, their family connections, it's probably very, very different. But for the moment that they're playing, all that drifts away. And I think that that is important that we have that in our classroom, because I'm telling you right now, in every classroom down here, you've got extreme right, you've got extreme left, you've got people in the middle. You've got straight, you've got gays, you've got Christians, you've got Muslims, you've got Jews, you've got atheists. They're all in these classrooms. And if we don't create space for them to have moments where they come together, the divide is just going to get bigger.
Right.
And unfortunately, the testing culture that we have created has caused teachers to be afraid of bringing playfulness into their classroom because they think, oh, we've got to focus on these standards and we've got to be so rigorous. And but play is rigor, and play can be your standards.
Bro, you guys have a whole chapter, right?
We have a whole chapter of excuses. We try to debunk those excuses. We have a whole section of ideas to try to get you going. If you go to our website, The Playful Classroom, we've got some tools there that can help you get going. For me, the biggest thing that I encourage people to take away from the book is the whole idea of the playful mindset. Right. You know, learning to be aware that playfulness is all around you, learning to trust the process of it, striving to make it a habit, because it's not going to happen overnight. I tell people every day, you're going to have to find one little nook and cranny in your daily schedule, in your classroom, and start there. This has been a years long process for Julie and I, and we felt so strongly about it. That's why we wrote the book. Our foreword is, by Dr. Stuart Brown. I don't know if y'all know him, but he is the leading play researcher of the last 50 years in the U.S. Him and another guy, Dr. Peter Gray, their research on the neuroscience of play. In the book, we talk about one of the studies that Dr. Brown did where he literally analyzed the play histories, the play backgrounds, the childhoods of serial killers. And he found that they all had a huge deficiency of play in their childhood. If you look at where we are in education, where they have removed play from even kindergarten, Yep. Schools are taking away, some schools are taking away PE during the COVID time because they need your PE teacher to do something else, you know, to be a sub. Recess has diminished across the board.
Everything's got to be rigorous. Rigor is a, it was a key word.
Here's what frustrates me as an educator, going back to how we should understand the brain. If you study the brain and study what happens to the brain when you are playing, it enhances rigor. It makes the rigor more acceptable to your brain. It makes the learning stick. You know, I took a biology class in high school. I made a D. I don't know anything about it. But in chemistry, I made a 100 A plus. But I still don't know anything about chemistry because it was rote memorization. There was no emotional connection to it. There was no meaningful relevance and fun to the chemistry class. It was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, notes on a transparency. Thursday, a pretest. Friday, the test. And on Thursday at the pretest, after we answered, she would tell us if our answers were right or wrong. Then the day of the test, it was the same test, just in a different order. If you had half a brain cell, you could figure out how to beat that system and make an A.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's crazy. I just had a conversation with a parents who, Jonah, I'm also a dog trainer.
Oh, cool. I love that.
My wife and I have been dog trainers for 20 plus years.
That's fantastic.
And a client just dropped off a dog and they were saying they're so happy that they're, you know, children are going back to school. And I said, yeah, it's fantastic. And they said, because all remote did was have kids cheat off each other. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's really a teacher problem, because if you're grading so that kids can cheat that easily and that's your assessment, that's the problem.
Yeah. You're asking the wrong kind of questions.
It's not the kid. It's not the kids.
Right. Well, don't you think that's a good skill? Like, do I want to spend 30 minutes reading an article? I failed the science of one of my science classes, and we were talking all about waves. And it wasn't until I graduated college and started surfing that I learned how waves form and all about waves. And now I think I could teach a whole class on the formation of waves and surfing on the East Coast, because now I need that. But in middle school, I didn't care about the grade.
And nobody needs to tell you this, but surfing is a form of play for you.
Well, you know what's funny is, as I started thinking when I was reading about free play versus deep play, and that how surfing started as free play
and moved into deep
play. But now, and now
they're connected. It's so connected, because almost every time that I've had moments of free play, I end up getting to that moment of deep play. Free play for me is in my office. Painting, sculpting with clay, making something with recycled materials. And I might start as, I'm just going to go in there and play. But as it evolves, I look at all the skills that my brain is using, and then I step back and I'll be like, wow, look at what's happened. And I think we've got to help people understand that that can happen in every grade level in the school system. The book says the power of play for all ages. But just this week, I had a friend of mine who I love, who is an amazing teacher. And he said to me, I bought your book, but I gave it to my daughter's elementary teacher because I teach AP US history. And I said to him, if there's ever a course that needs more playfulness, it's AP US history. You need to, and I said, this book is for you. And I mailed him another copy. And I signed it to him so he can't give it away. And I love the man. He is a fantastic teacher. He was a finalist for State Teacher of the Year with me. His name's Patrick Kelly. He's an amazing human. But I was like, it is for everyone. Right. When you get older and you maybe have onset dementia or early Alzheimer's, they tell you, do crosswords, Sudoku. Yeah. To keep that brain active, because it releases all those chemicals in your brain that helps keep firing those synapses.
Yes, neurons and synapses are firing and working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marcia Tate was right all those years ago when she said worksheets don't grow dendrites. She's exactly right. They don't grow them. Playfulness will, though. Playfulness will grow dendrites.
We did a whole Lego thing on our government chapter, our types of government, and it was from a podcast that Ron and I had with another educator. And I just thought, like, how this is so boring. It's nothing but reading and worksheets. And the guy's like, do Legos, use Minecraft. And it was like, oh, like,
yeah, yeah.
Over 3 weeks, like it was, and it was freaking awesome because it was like so many times and so many. I wish it was like a full day thing, but like there's so many experiences when they're like, can I keep working on this? Or, you know, like I love getting the question, why does it have to end now? Like, and it's like, well, figuring things, not, I don't want to say it's, but it is work on me because the kids say, this is what we want to do. And then I have to put that into the experience and connect them
right.
to people and connect all the dots.
And that goes back to what we said, you know, it's on the back cover of the book. It needs to be meaningful, relevant, and fun.
Yep.
And if they tell you they want to do it, that means it's meaningful and relevant right off the bat, you know, and you help make it fun. It's just, to me, it's a no brainer. I don't understand why educators would want to fight it.
Right.
But that's why we wrote the book, because we want to help educate people and
well,
help
don't
them
you think
see.
Because it is hard. It is hard.
Oh, it's
a lot
very,
of work and it's scary at first. It is scary.
It is very scary. One of my most requested workshops that I do is called Destroy the Box. And yep. it's a title that's a play kind of on words, but against the saying, think outside the box. I don't want to think outside the box anymore. I just want to get rid of the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because thinking outside the box means that when I'm done, I can get back in the box.
Right.
It seems very temporary. And
right.
the reason people get back in the box is because they're afraid of what's outside. The inside is comfortable. It's familiar. It's routine. It's, you know, it is hard work. And I wish that here's what I wish that we as educators would be more willing to say it's too hard than it's not right, because saying it's not right is wrong. It is very much right to have a playful classroom.
Right.
The science supports it. If our goal is to have learning stick, playful classroom, art-filled classroom, meaningful, relevant, fun classrooms, it sticks. But so many of our educators, specifically the higher ups, you know, sometimes it's the superintendents of the state or the districts or the admins of a building. They say rigor, 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 but they don't understand that rigor, rigor, rigor. It's not what they think it is. And we've got to be more honest that, yeah, it is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Right.
And I think that that's a really good point. Like saying saying it's hard versus it does. I can't do it or it's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's wrong.
Yeah.
Just say what
yeah.
it is.
Well, because then it puts it on them.
Anything,
right?
Anything worth doing is hard.
Hard. Yep.
Right.
You know, it's going to be hard. But the kids are worth it, and we've yep. got to. You know, I do. When I look at my course syllabus for children's lit and my fine arts courses that's coming up, I provide experiences that are not the traditional college experience. The traditional college experience is lecture based. And you take notes and have a test.
Right.
And my classes are not like that. My classes are very experiential. We go outside. I bring in lots of materials. I have a collapsible wagon that usually has two or three Rubbermaid bins stacked up on top of it, full of materials that I'm taking to my college courses. Because I know that at every level, you know, the kids, my college kids, they need those kinds of experiences to help the learning stick, to make the memories, you know?
Yep.
And are the other teachers going, why are you bringing all that stuff in?
Yep. 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 And I get good reviews for my courses. So that's why they keep asking me back. But I know that some of them are looking and thinking, what's he doing? You don't need all that, you know?
Sometimes that's the best compliment though.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, I love it. I love it when especially if it's a professor outside of the education department, you know, like if it's a nursing educator or a business, I love it when a business professor sees my wagon. You got a presentation today? They think I'm a student, you know, or something. I'm like, no, I'm an adjunct here. Come take my class. You know, I love it. I just love it. I do.
That's awesome. And I love the you have that in the book, and I think it was in the outside the box, destroy the box section, mm-hmm. about the was it Tanner Christensen's alternative uses?
Yeah. Yep.
Like that is how I am. That is starting my classes on day one.
Yes.
That is going to be it. We're not talking about rules and guidelines. We're putting a ruler or paperclip or whatever on the desk. And
Do it with a ruler. Before you do it, ask them. I literally say, tell me what this is.
Yep.
They say a ruler. And I said, and it is four. And they say measurement. And I say, and they say straight line. Every time, every group will say that. There's an occasional person, usually a little bit older, that says spanking. You get a spanking with one of those, you know? And, you know, that, okay, fine. I said, but most of you say these two things. It's because you have been put in a box yourself. You see this object and your first thought is what everybody has told you it's for rather than its potential. What could it be? You know, what could it be for? The ruler, my first memory of a ruler was not measurement or a straight line. My first memory of a ruler was at my great grandma's old house that when she wanted the windows open, it was before windows had locks that held them up. Yeah. She had a ruler in every windowsill so she could prop the window open. I didn't know a ruler was for measurement until I got to school. You know? So don't tell me it's just for measurement. In my mind, it's a window propper opener. That's what it's for. You know? Or a shoehorn. You know?
Right.
I don't know. It
was always a ramp for Hot Wheels cars.
Yeah, a ramp. Yeah, there you go.
Well, I was thinking if you did use an eraser and the ruler, right? But that's playfulness, right? Like,
yeah, I love it. Yeah, all those. And when I do, so I do that, and I do the destroy the box challenges, and I'm going to try to be more intentional about them on Twitter. I should put them on Instagram too, because I think the teachers there would really like it. But just each week doing some kind of destroy the box challenge like that. It's amazing what the responses that you get. But when I do it with teachers, some of their answers are very practical. But then all it takes is one person to say, hey, what if it was a seesaw for Barbie and Ken? And then, you know, that gets their brain going in this non-traditional, practical way. You know, it's very fun to watch it evolve. Tanner Christensen book, I highly recommend it. Follow him on Instagram. Go to his blog. It's called creativesomething.net. He's just a really cool guy. I opened up some dialogue with him, and he sent me a bunch of books to give away a couple of years ago. And when I told him I was using his work with teachers, he said, really? I never thought about that. And I was like, man, you're – and it kind of made me sad because, you know, if teachers aren't peddlers of creativity, then – you know, who is? We should be encouraging that, you know, at any cost. And he was like, man, I love that you're using this with teachers. I was like, they're eating it up. They love it. And I went through and actually highlighted ones that I felt like were really good for classroom use. Some of them, they wouldn't work in a classroom setting. I mean, you might could tweak it and make it, but that book, The Creativity Challenge, fantastic resource. And it's only like 10 bucks on Amazon.
Wow. I'm going to have to, that's on my list.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to thank you for all that. It has been, I don't think I've laughed so much during a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, it's just been fun. So
and playful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Where can people follow you?
I would love for people to follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. At Mr. Dairyberry is my username and all of those. My TikTok is very minimal right now, but I would love to get more on there. I try to start doing like these little short book talks on there, but I really just like to be silly on TikTok. I don't even want to talk about teacher stuff. I just want to be playful on TikTok.
Cool.
But I talk more about educational issues on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm very socially justice minded on the platforms as well. So they'll get playfulness and they'll get some social justice tweets and thoughts as well. Go to my website, MrDairyBear.com. You can order books straight from me on there if you would like to. I know you can order them on Amazon cheaper, but Jeff Bezos is going to buy another yacht, or you can help me pay my power bill. I mean, so we got the Playful Classroom, and then I have a second book called The Courageous Classroom. It just came out just a month ago.
Yep.
Wrote that with a fantastic author, Dr. Janet Taylor, who is a psychiatrist in Florida. Amazing human who was a pleasure to write with her. And you get both of those there. Also, the Playful Classroom is another website that we have that talks a little bit more about the work of play. And we have some resources on there as well.
Awesome. Awesome. And maybe we'd have you back on to talk about the Courageous Classroom once Joe and
I would love it. I will be honest with you. The two books are very, very different. The Courageous Classroom is very heavy. It's all about the subtitle, Creating a Culture of Safety for Students to Learn and Thrive. And we talk about the effects of fear and trauma on learning, but also on teaching that some educators, many of us educators, have our own fear and trauma from our childhood, from our present lives, that plays a factor into our work in the classroom. So it's a very different book, but I love to talk about it. It's full of personal stories from me and my students, and some from my own childhood and trauma that happened with me. So I'd love to come back and talk about that sometime.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much.
Teacher nerds knocking on your door. Open up, let's take your teaching further than before. Give it a try, don't be shy, there's nothing there to lose. Worst thing that happens, kids get pain on their shoes. We're talking teacher nerds.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Keep up with every new episode by subscribing on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or anywhere you listen. When you subscribe, be sure to give us a review and tell a friend. Visit us at teachernerds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Teacher Nerds, on Instagram at Teacher Nerds Podcast, or email us teachernerds@gmail.com. And remember, we're nerds with a Z. Most importantly, thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds.